It's with great joy and gratitude that I join you today to share some of my reflections on Bishop Curry's beautiful chapter, Love's Call and Love's Calling, which is a call to become the true you, someone made in the image of God, deserving of and receiving love. This is an essential part of the love equation offered in the greatest commandments given by Jesus: love God, love neighbor, love self. My intention this morning is to share my own personal journey into this deeper wellspring of this thing we call love. I'm not a theologian or a biblical scholar, but just simply a wounded human like all of us, seeking to answer that longing, that call, and can only offer my own experiences and stories as I tread this pathway toward love. I invite you to reflect on your own stories as you listen to my story of learning how to see with the eye of the heart. Our wonderful Word and Life group has spent the last 2 years exploring the cultural and political chaos in our country in order to understand and gain some perspective from a spiritual point of view on the divisions threatening to tear us apart. We began where we came full circle today, diving into how we can shift our usual mode of seeing and acting into seeing with the eyes of the heart as we explore how to become coherent within ourselves in order to manifest love. We explored our connection with the natural world and to the cosmic Christ. And as our cultural issues escalated, we explored how to heal the heart of democracy and how to confront implicit racism. It's with this foundation we have arrived at the point of seeking the wisdom that will allow us how to transform ourselves and confront these challenges, coming from a state of love. The question is, how do we transform ourselves in order to truly love, unconditionally accept ourselves, and become vessels of God's divine love? It is our hope and intention with this offering from Bishop Curry that we will give you a roadmap of how to manifest love in action. So as I ponder how to respond to these questions and underscore Bishop Curry's wise words, I thought about a number of ways that love shows up in my life, both personally and professionally. And as I continue to explore my own spiritual journey, perhaps the best way is to begin with a simple personal story. A moment that my heart to understand the answer to that existential question, why am I here? As I did every day, I showed up to feed my mother her noontime meal at the assisted living facility because her body was twisted and broken from the ravages of Lewy body form of Parkinson's, and she was nearly blind. Yet her mind was sharp and she was still engaged in life. As always, I was in pain, watching her struggle to even swallow. And I had to listen carefully as she spoke in almost a whisper. Why am I still here? I was speechless and brokenhearted, as I couldn't think of any reason why she should continue to suffer so. And then surprisingly, there was a deep feeling of calmness settling in me. A sensation if time had stopped, and my heart was filled with a sense of well-being. As I heard myself say unexpectedly, you are here to become love. Now, this unbidden response shook me for a moment. It sounded kind of odd. Did I really mean to say it that way? And the answer was a clear yes. That's exactly the answer to what she was asking. And her face broke into a beautiful smile of understanding. It was clear to me that there was a subtle but profound difference between being loved by another or loving one another with this strange response to become love. If this was the purpose of our incarnation, how could I begin to answer this call for myself? How could I learn to become love? As I watched the next few months, my mother increasingly became infused with lightness and gentleness I'd never seen before. Her smile and softening features told me that she was at peace, and she was grateful for every act of kindness. At the end, she was almost translucent. And when she made her final surrender at Sarah House, so many love-related synchronicities showed up in the form of unexpected connections with exactly the loved one she needed to say farewell to, and with Sister Karita print of love watching over her. And then she gently closed her eyes and took her last breath as we sat with her singing Amazing Grace in the Lord's Prayer on her bed. She surrendered into that great field of love. In that moment, the room was infused with a deep, sacred presence, and we were all met and embraced in that field that Rumi speaks about, that liminal or thin place beyond ideas of right or wrong, where the two worlds touch. And so I've continued my journey into listening to God's call to love more fully and remember who I am. How can I learn to transform this state and live each day increasingly in that field of love? Still a huge work in progress, I might add. Bishop Curry so beautifully described his own journey into this transformation, always using the touchstone of the commandment from Jesus, love your neighbor as yourself. So I'm going to focus on that part of the equation, yourself. What stands out for me in his story is the assertion that the call to God is to become the true you, the one that is always deserving of God's boundless love. And remember that the ability to love others is related to our capacity to love yourself. Think of the oxygen mask analogy on the plane. Secure your own breath before helping someone else who is struggling to get their mask on and breathe. We tend to focus on that part, loving thy neighbor, without doing the same for ourselves. The challenge is to create a life that fulfills both needs. How do we come to love ourselves when self-hatred is such an easy trap? This love of self is a fierce love in which we turn our unconditioned gaze toward ourselves with delight. I exist because I matter. To move directly into loving and serving thy neighbor without healing one's own self and loving oneself is really not authentic love. It may merely be transactional and even self-serving. We can name this as spiritual bypass as we attempt to meet the needs of others without truly healing our own wounds first. We must surrender our comparison with others, our shame, our defensiveness, and overcome the schism within ourselves in order to truly love ourselves through God's eyes. When there's a discrepancy between my innermost aliveness and my actions in the world, there's a dissonance. A right action done with a wrong energy will ultimately become a wrong action. When we fail to have this reciprocal flow of love, the divine energy of love becomes blocked and often superficial. Now, I'm going to make two distinctions between the levels of healing and accepting ourselves so that this love can flow. At the psychological level, we speak of confronting our shadow self or our false self. There are parts of us that we hide from the world and from ourselves. It's a camouflage that we seek to hide our unworthiness. This is a part of ourselves that we disown. The self-judgment, the shame, the comparison with others, the wounds from trauma, the desire for revenge, hatred of ourselves and others. This is the path of suffering I walk with broken souls every day as a clinical psychologist in my office, as we sit together to relieve the suffering that comes from turning away and disowning parts of ourselves. When we fail to acknowledge these parts of ourselves, they become toxic and harmful. Our work at this level of healing is to critique the reality of our own experience with gentleness and acceptance. There's such tremendous pain and suffering in our world today, and it mostly stems from our inability to love ourselves, to love ourselves. It is important to first heal these wounds that disconnect you from the web of love. And in order to do this, we must first turn toward and truly see the broken within us. As Rumi's poetry calls us to the beloved, he reminds us, don't turn away. Keep your gaze on the bandage place. That's where the light enters. Only then can we be released from the prison of fear, shame, anger, and separation. And when we surrender this image of our brokenness, we can polish the lens of our perception and truly see through the eyes of the heart. And in doing so, we raise the energy of love and the quality of our aliveness. A beautiful practice that enhances this self-acceptance is the welcoming prayer. This was developed out of the centering prayer movement from Father Thomas Keating, or perhaps the Tonglen practice from the Buddhist tradition, inviting those painful feelings and suffering in order to transform them into acceptance and ultimately use them as ingredients for becoming love. This can be a powerful bridge into the second type of healing, the wounded self, the spiritual level, that which believes that we are separate from the sea of love from which we're created. I believe that the notion that we're separate stems from the initial shock of coming into this embodied state. That pain of childbirth, wow, the bright lights, wow, do I really want to be here? And it is a sacred duty of the community to hold each new life in unconditional love and acceptance in order to prevent the pain of the perception of separation. Think of a mother's gaze with the infant and the loving gaze that is returned. In this reciprocal process, there's a release of oxytocin, the love hormone. This reciprocal love between mother and child is the flow of God's love and sets the child up for knowing that she is connected within the field of love at the beginning. When this is lacking, there's a tragic disconnect, and we call it an attachment disorder, setting up a lifetime of searching for that source, that connection. And yet, the only thing that can separate you from God's love is the untrue thought or belief that you're separate. The goal of spirituality is to ultimately unite us all in our own woundedness with our and separation from our source. When we can accept and forgive the shadow wounds, we can use them to move into communion with everything, into the reality of love. It is then that we can become transformed love in the service of others. I'm grateful that my field of psychology and neuroscience is finally catching up and learning what spiritual practices have been telling us for centuries. We find that contemplation and meditation make people kinder, even toward those who are strangers or even enemies. Practicing gratitude makes people more generous, helpful, patient. Even such activities, just working together, chanting, praying together, create this invisible web of connection. These practices lessen depression, anxiety, increase health, reduce the risk of early death, and we find that there are actual changes physiologically, especially in the brain and nervous system. Yes, our physical bodies are designed to be receptacles of God's love. And for too long, the church has denied the body as the vessel of God's love. We can actually enhance our physical receptivity to divine love with our intentional practices. Love is who you are. And the challenge is to first remember this and then learn to hold that higher vibrational force that allows love to flow through you and infuse you as a vessel of God's love in the world. According to two of my wisdom contemplative teachers, Cynthia Bourgeau and Richard Rohr, our ultimate task is to strengthen our capacity to behold the suffering of the world and bear the brilliant beams of God's love. We have one job in this lifetime. 1. Although we are created in the image of God's love, it is our responsibility to fully embody and participate in this flow of divine love. Yes, we are here to become love. But we must be willing to say yes to this call and strengthen our capacity to sustain this state of higher energetic love. When we're in this state of love, it's natural to make each encounter a meeting of the hearts, to be fully present and accepting that divine spark in each other. This is when we can truly love our neighbor as ourselves. My personal daily prayer is, make me an instrument of God's love, simple yet profound. So how might we do this? Well, it seems to me that there are three main openings or portals into this direct experience with divine love. The first comes unbidden. Sometimes a deep and unexpected mystical experience or synchronicity that can momentarily break us out of our ordinary consciousness and give us a taste of this lightness of being. These experiences seem to take us out of ordinary time and space and open us up to a new way of seeing, if only momentarily. C.S. Lewis calls this state surprised by joy. Thomas Merton's experience on the street corner described his opening to oneness. And Barbara Holmes talks about thin spaces, where the experience of God is unfiltered, direct, internal, beyond time and space. We're jolted out of our routine into awareness, where raw and naked truth abide, and there's no separation of the visible and invisible. These mystical experiences or thin spaces offer us the opportunities to see the world differently as in the outside world, in ordinary moments or in sacred places. They shake us out of our slumber of ordinary consciousness into an awakened heart perception, if only momentarily. Now, we shouldn't mistake these experiences as a sign that we've arrived, nor should we seek them out. It can become addictive to seek and try to find them. They merely come uninvited. They're little samplings of what is beyond our ordinary senses. The important thing is to notice and be grateful. Perhaps you've all had them. And then secondly, perhaps your path into this knowing of divine love is through experiences of deep suffering, in which you become vulnerable and surrender into God's unending mercy. It's as if we're cracked open and you become receptive through surrender. There is nothing you can do to make God love you less. And in our surrender, we wake up in this sea of mercy of love, in which we've always been swimming, and which links everything together. We all knew people who have been transformed through this deep suffering. Perhaps you have yourself. It's in our brokenness that we have this opportunity for growth into love. This was my mother's portal into true love and surrender. And finally, in my perspective, the experience of deep transcendent love may also be accessed through a disciplined practice of intentional and conscious attention, contemplation, in connection with the creative world in this present moment. We're all part of this great web of God's creation, and love is the ingredient holding everything together. Now, this state is often accessed through our practices of contemplation and meditation, where we can actually strengthen the perception through our heart rather than through our divided mind. It seems to me that if God is love, the ground of being, that we're all created as unique and precious fractals of this love on earth, such as the various points of colored light that stream forth from the facets of a stained glass window, each unique yet necessary as part of the whole. The clearer the shards of glass, the brighter the light can shine through. Now, this notion has been formed out of the Christian wisdom tradition that I'm speaking to you from, and it's infused by the teachings of the Christian mystics. Thomas Merton talks about our holiness as the point vierge. At the center of our being is a point of nothingness, which is untouched by sin and illusion, a point of truth, a spark that belongs entirely to God. This may be viewed as also as an evolutionary path for the consummation of divine love, as suggested by Teilhard, and supported by the belief that we are here to assist in this process of evolution through our transformation of vessels of God's love. Yes, we are here to become love. And we are active participants in manifesting God's love in this world. It starts with loving oneself. Now, at times it feels as if this path is overwhelming, confusing, lonely, and counter to what much of the world looks like around me. But I'm drawn back to my own lived experiences, which I now recognize as God's call to me in love without measure in times of great suffering, loss, and extraordinary moments of grace. And these are offered in these unbidden, synchronous moments of joy and lightness. So perhaps it's in our own remembered stories that we may discern how love's calling is working in our life. And so my story continues. Circling back to my mother for a moment, I'm going to recount my earliest experience of unconditional love that came simultaneously at the young age of 8 in the midst of my own suffering. It was here I experienced my mother's painful devotion to me. I was also swept up in a moment of unexplained oneness with creation. And finally, this notion of surrendered love was bookended by a simple little book that was put in my hand from the local library, a moment of synchronicity. My first remembered encounter with the felt presence of the divine was when I was 8. I experienced a rather rocky childhood due to a very difficult bout with polio and a lung disease, histoplasmosis, at the same time, with hospitalization, surgeries, beginning with strict isolated bed rest for nearly a year. No one was allowed to see me except when necessary. I remember the worried looks on my mother's face and the priests that came to bless me and pray for me. They'd been told I was terminal. All I cared about was getting lost in a world of books, shaping the wondrous stories of horses out of clay. However, this was also a great time of loneliness and feeling disconnected from the world. My world was limited to the view from my window. I think I was also probably fearful and anxious. My touchstone during this time came in the form of a little book. It was called Angel Unaware. I'm going to show it to you right here. Okay, some of you may remember this little book. It was written by Dale Evans. I was so moved by the story of her little baby, Robin, who was born with Down syndrome and only lived 2 years. It was written from the baby's voice and gave me great solace. My first understanding that there was purpose in pain. I was also touched by the extraordinary love that was given to her as well as received. Her parents took a wider stance to what might have been a tragedy and saw a larger meaning to her birth, ultimately making countless differences in lives of children all over the world. I vowed that this would be my work in the world if I lived long enough to grow up. No matter how broken a child may appear, I was to love and walk with each one of them. As a side note, I met her years ago when my husband bought this little book at a charity auction. And I was actually able to tell her how much her book had changed my life. Tears flowed on both sides. And then during the same time, one night while still confined to bed, I glanced out my window, which was my only contact with the outside world. And I experienced the most extraordinary shift in my awareness. It opened a portal into another dimension. And it has stayed with me my entire life. Gazing out of the window in my loneliness, I was amazed at the beauty of the full moon peeking in and out of the lustrous clouds. Suddenly, this image became alive and shimmered and glowed while time stopped and my body was filled with a warm, loving radiance, giving me a sense of complete connection to everything despite my isolation. I became this shimmering moon. Even now, I can drop spontaneously into this wondrous state for a few precious moments. And then I returned to that ordinate of doctors, needles, loneliness. My mother was distraught, feeling helpless. And then one Sunday night, exhausted, she ventured into an empty church pew and implored God to release me if it was his will. The profound selfless surrender perhaps changed the course of my life. The next day, when I had my weekly slew of tests, the doctor came to her with great puzzlement. He said, "I can't find any trace of these illnesses in my body. A miracle? I don't know, but I'm still here." And then I went back to my ordinary life as a child and student, falling asleep again until I was in my 30s. When I followed a strong, undeniable pull of intuition, I picked up stakes and moved from Chicago to Santa Barbara, meeting exactly the mentors I learned from, one of whom is in the room today. And you know who you are. And here my story continues. Looking back, I can see the thread of events that this move set in motion, leading me to the pathway of spiritual opening that I'm still pursuing today. And these divine encounters and synchronicities continue to present themselves. And this brings me to the next little book that amplified and clarified the course of my spiritual journey and reminded me perhaps of these experiences I had as a child. Several years ago, a group of friends from St. Mark's in the Valley were in a silent retreat at St. Mary's when a devotion was read by the sister at lunch. And it was a passage from this little book, Mystical Hope. Did you see that? By Cynthia Bourgeau. I was struck as if by lightning with a deep knowing. This described the pathway of love and wholeness that I had briefly experienced as a child and which I periodically dip into even now. I knew this was to be my life journey as well as a challenge. According to Cynthia Bourgeau, mystical hope is an abiding state of being, of loving. And it is our responsibility as stewards of creation to develop a conscious and permanent connection to this wellspring, to become a vessel, a chalice into which this divine energy of love can pour, a lamp through which it can shine. So how are we to become fully embodied in this state of love? How do we do it? How do I manifest love in action? How do I move from the mental construct of the word love into the embodied sensation of becoming love, swimming in that sea of mercy? There are several intentional practices that will help you sustain on this path. Circling back to that third opening I mentioned, which is really the royal road to transformation, we can begin with the inner practice all familiar with. These practices strengthen our heart, minds, and bodies to become coherent vessels of love. Conscious attention. Notice what's going on inside and outside without judgment, labeling, comparing. Bring your full self into the state of presence and balance. Learning to see, breaking out of that slumber of automatic thinking. Mindfulness. Practice can help us see with new eyes. We can also practice to pay attention to those subtle breakthroughs into ordinary consciousness that I described. What is the message here? And another way that I really found helpful was given to us at Trinity from Brian during Lent a couple of years ago. He asked us each day to intentionally fall in love with something in your ordinary experience, to make the ordinary extraordinary. And then we can practice surrendering, that inner gesture of releasing expectations, of control, identification with our ego, releasing our preconceived mental constructs of clinging. Centering prayer is a powerful practice of emptying, surrendering, much as my mother did in that church. This practice will help you trust and fall into the arms of God. Learning how to walk without knowing where you're going. Rest and relax into the unknown. And finally, bringing yourself into coherence intentionally and consciously bringing all of your centers, your mental, your emotional, and physical sensations into balance and congruence through these practices and noticing when you're out of balance and hold this frequency of love's energy. We learned some of this with our early study of heart math back a couple of years ago. When you discover your true nature and live into it, self-love radiates and spills out in the world as a service to heal the broken world. You breathe God's love into every space you inhabit. When one abides in this state of coherence and higher energy of love, the atmosphere around you changes through the quality of your presence. I'm sure you all know people who walk into a room and exude this presence, this pouring out of love. So what does love in action look like? Well, we start with just remembering the practice of the pause. Notice when you're disconnected. Notice when you fall out of a state of wholeness. Find a way each day to notice your tendency to divide the field of your perception and move back into an undivided perception through your heart. And walk in love. Cultivate an intentional practice that comes, the presence that comes from the stance of love in all your actions. Bring this presence through your transformed consciousness. And I know we're going to be talking later with Judith, and I think she's here today, Valente, about the Benedictine practice and just finding a rhythm in your life that will sustain this. It's a dedication. It's a discipline every day to support this inner transformation. In the Living School, we developed a rhythm of life. There were four parts to this, very similar to the Benedictine practice. Studying the sacred texts and teachers. How do their stories relate to your life? Forming a community, support one another on this path. We begin with the mother's gaze as the first community. Bring our loving encounter to our loving presence to every encounter. Walking in solidarity with the suffering of the world. Truly seeing each person. I see you is the greatest gift we can give another. And finally, that practice, that disciplined practice of contemplation and inner transformation to reach that higher state so that we can sustain this loving presence in order to see. So I'm going to invite you now, just as we end, on a journey to truly see yourself as part of the living web of humankind and as a living presence, to see the world into healing with a final meditation. And I'll start out with a little story here. A young man recently hobbled into my office, his body twisted and broken from a severe birth defect. I'd known him since he was a child and had always admired his tenacity in what I thought was his healthy adjustment to his disability. I saw him through the eyes of his disability. He had been mandated recently to see a counselor as a result of a serious brush with the law. I was shocked. He was angry and barely spoke in a whisper, mumbling that his life was worthless. It was then that I realized I'd never really seen his true self. I'd never seen him behind that superficial veil that covered the suffering. But in that moment of anguish, I did see him. I responded, "I see you. And you're worthy of love." He began to sob uncontrollably. I sat with him until the tears subsided, and he said, "What can I do?" My response was to invite him to sit in silence and remember that he was loved no matter what. And then out of that invitation, together we created a simple meditation that I'm going to share with you and end with. He used this every day until his brittle armor of self-hate began to crack and he could begin to see the beautiful soul that he truly was, that he was loved and whole, no matter the circumstances or brokenness. So this ending meditation is to help us remember and see your true self, to open yourself to receive the gifts of love and return those higher energies of love back into the world, to participate in the divine dance of receiving and giving love. So we're going to start with our breath, which is we began this morning with. And on the in-breath, I want you to, you can say out loud or to yourself, I am. I'm breathing in love, remembering my true self, stripping away the layers of camouflage, receiving the gifts of divine love from the realms beyond our ordinary consciousness. And I'm going to invite you to use a gesture to remember that I am love. So as you say this, place your hands on your heart. I am love. And then on the out breath, breathing out love, a sense of wholeness, balance, coherence, and aliveness imbued with these higher energies of love, giving back to the world. I am love. I am love. I am love. And as you're breathing in and out, noticing that liminal space between the breaths, that state of non-being, of unknowing, surrendering into the mysteries of love. So shall we begin? I'm going to end by sharing a greeting with you that I hope you can practice when you encounter someone. It was given to us by Jackie Lewis last week at Richard Rohr's Final Conspire Conference. And it's an Ubuntu greeting given by those folks in the tribe anytime they see one another. And they start out by saying, I see you. And the response is, I am here, offering that circle of love to each other. And so what I'm saying to you this morning is, I see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marianne. I see some clapping in the windows over there. So do you want to, I'm going to put the question in the chat. Would you like to read it and introduce our discussion question for the morning?
Let me see. Okay. The question is, how does love show up in your life, calling you to become your true self?